know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good day. Everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid. And of course, if you couldn't tell, I ain't Bob. Bob's in Minneapolis at Netroots Nation. I am John Fox down here in Australia, filling in for the man for the rest of the week. And yeah, I know, it's funny. I get to introduce myself on this show when I do it. I keep thinking we got to recut a second, another intro for when I do this. But anyway, you know, all on that list of stuff that should be done. And I think the rain's supposed to finally stop here sometime today. Tell you what, north of here, some pretty bad flooding. Not what went down in Queensland 6 months ago, but, you know. More of Mother Nature going, you know. Here you go. Here's 2 months of rain in 3 days. How you like them apples? Anyway. But it's Wednesday, ain't it? And you know what Wednesday means. Choir master, fire it up.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches.
Sing it!
Thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Praise Jesus! Praise Jesus!
Sorry, and I won't even try and do the whole preacher thing that Bob does, because, well, I'm not Bob! But I'm right with him when it comes to this whole religion industry stuff, and they've got a wide variety of prayer meeting material. But I was going to start with the positive one, because, you know, it's good to start with something positive. But as I'm going through, no, I got to start with the just insanely crazy one. We all understand very well that that 20 to 30% of the population that are make up most of the Tea Party probably make up most of the fundamentalists out there. Or at least the Republican politicians are both playing for both those audiences, but I think that they overlap. I'm getting way ahead of myself anyway. Email rolls into John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. The number for getting in on the program, just get the conversation going, is 304-574-7811. Things that you say so often where you don't think about them, then suddenly you think about it while you're saying it and you completely blow it. Anyway. I got sent this various versions of this story from various people. I think all the bloggers sent it to me. But we're now seeing Tea Party child indoctrination camps. And I consider this as much religion industry as anything else. Over at Crooks and Liars, John Amato posts, how many times have you heard Glenn Beck tell his audience that liberals and public schools are indoctrinating America to become socialists, Marxists, and radical Muslims? Well, now there's this from the Tampa 912 Project, okay? 912 Project, there you go. From Tampa, here's another option now that the kids are out of school. A week-long seminar about our nation's founding principle, courtesy of the Tampa 912 Project. The organization, which falls under the Tea Party umbrella, hopes to introduce kids ages 8 to 12 to principles that include America is good, I believe in God, and I work hard for what I have, and I will share it with who I want to. With who I want to. with who I want to. Government cannot force me to be charitable. Okay, so, you know, like, I don't, you know, y'all know I am as screaming an atheist as there is. Ah, phone's ringing already. Welcome to the program. Who we got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan. How are you?
Well, I'm a little shocked.
What about? Take your pick.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the Tea Party camps for children, you know, that's pretty much, you expect a snake to act like a snake. You expect that from them.
Well, yeah.
What you're going to get is a bunch of kids that are totally screwed up, or they're going to be turned into automatons, or they're going to turn into the people who shoot up schools, you know.
Well,
or they're going to turn into, hopefully, Democrats.
Well, but, you know, just in the opening bit where they're describing it, just like, you know, the absolute hypocrisy, and how do you make this add up in your head if you have a functioning brain? Where, you know, they're
yeah.
You know, introduce kids to principles that include, you know, America is good. I believe in God. And then right after I believe in God, I work hard for what I have and I will share it with who I want to. Government cannot force me to be charitable. Right after the I believe in God routine. Now, cause right as you were ringing in, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, okay, I don't believe any of this stuff, but, you know, the concepts of, you know, clothing, you know, feeding a hungry person, da 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 da, is, you know, one of the big tenets there, and right there they just kind of like stomp all over it.
Yeah.
And when I was 8 to 12, I was taught to be nice to people, to be charitable to those that you thought didn't have it as well as you did.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea...
Yeah, I'm not a Christian, but the, you know, that verse, you know, as you are to the least of me, so you are to me.
Yeah, the golden rule idea, you know, like that's something that can transcend, you know, where, you know, if people didn't follow things like religions and, you know, actually use them as just like studies in a philosophy, there'd be a lot more benefit, because you could pull things like that out and say, here, you know, it's good to be good to people. And this idea of basically indoctrinating sociopaths, if just by that opening description, I don't...
Yeah, well, you know, what I'm feeling shocked about isn't so much the children, because children are resilient and they'll, you'd be surprised, you can abuse a child horribly and they'll turn out normally 9 times out of 10. What's shocking me is two items I ran across, both having to do with religion. The one is dear old Rick Goodhair Perry. He's declared himself a prophet.
Are you talking about this prayer meeting thing that he's putting on in Texas?
Well, basically, he's saying Texans don't like me because a prophet is not loved in their hometown.
Oh, okay. I missed this bit. Oh, okay. A prophet isn't. Oh, right. Boy, he's really getting full. He's getting full of himself now, isn't he?
Yeah, isn't it? Never mind the fact that they might not like him because he's continuing the policy of totally screwing up that state.
Well, it just so happens that I have a press release here from the Texas Freedom Network, which is basically, you know, an anti-religious right outfit. Mm-hmm. But they're reporting that the churches are bucking up against him. And from their press release, from this letter from a whole group of clergy, We believe in a healthy boundary between church and state. Now, Perry's wanting to host this big, bloody prayer service in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But he's using political action funds to run it. It's really weird, and the churches aren't liking it. So this whole bunch of clergy have stood up like on hello church, you know, separation of church and state. And they say, we believe in a healthy boundary between church and state. Out of respect for the state, we believe it should represent all citizens equally and without preference of religious or philosophical tradition. Out of respect for religious communities, we believe that they should foster faithful ways of living without favoring one political party over another. Keeping the church and state separate allows each to thrive and upholds our proud national tradition of empowering citizens to worship freely and vote conscientiously. We are concerned that our governor has crossed the line by organizing and leading a religious event rather than focusing on the people's business in Austin.
Yeah. Okay, here's my other thing. And this one is what really shocked me. Not so much because of its religious aspect, but because of its incredible stupidity. yeah. There is a preacher, the Reverend Albert Mohler, Jr. He's with the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He has decided to stick his fat little face into the Anthony Weiner scandal.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. He has said, and this is a quote, atonement. He needs to seek atonement. Found only in Jesus Christ. Now, that's just fine for one problem. Anthony Weiner's a Jew.
Yeah.
You know, the rank stupidity is just, oh, my God. Where are these people's heads?
Up there, you know what.
Yeah. No.
for the most part.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep my language nice for the on air station.
Anything.
Four letter words, but I will go rasa.
Yeah.
No. I could say something to this guy. I won't. But somebody needs to take him out behind a barn someplace. And teach him the meaning of respect.
You can't ever...
Maybe somebody allied with the Mossad.
Let's not get ugly on our own behalf. I mean, that's
hey, I'm not talking about killing. I'm not talking about beating the crap out of him to teach him a little lesson.
Well,
you don't burn if you're dead.
No, because he'll just turn around. Susan. He'll just turn around sitting there going, this was a test sent by God. This was sent to test me. This beating was a test. And see, this is where, you know, this one of my views of all religion is that they're, you know, basically prejudicial or racist, shall we say, just by default, because they're basically saying, we are chosen, you are not. And so how is anyone going to ever... So if you believe something like that, how are you going to ever have any respect for anyone that is not part of your little clique? And I find it just such an immature... And I get it thrown in my face by some people who have... You know, real faith, do real positive things with it, and yet seem to have their heads screwed on. But you know, unfortunately, you see stuff like this, and this Perry guy, is it down to the fact that you know things are so screwed up at the moment, and the Republican field is such a mess that it's going to be
he's viable.
A dead fight for the knuckle dragging. you know, religious rights, which I think that they feel pretty spurned by the Bushes last time, so I don't know if it would actually work this time around.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do you think this country has gone down the tubes when a very, very tiny minority of the country, which is basically what the Tea Partiers and the right-wing religious industry is, they are an extremely tiny minority. They are, in effect, running this country. Whether they're in power or not, yeah. They're running it.
Yeah. They're setting the agenda.
Now, to me, that says a whole lot about what kind of straits this society's in. Help.
Well, I, you know, this is one of the things that I've come back to a few times this week, you know, because I haven't been doing this in a while, so I haven't really been vocalizing my opinion of what's going on over there. And it's like I really did reach kind of burnout for a while, because it's just like, wow, man, can we have just like one day where something constructive happens? And I've got something that I'm going to get into.
Okay. I've got something for you.
Yeah.
But it's not religion-based.
That's all right.
Okay, within sec. Okay, you heard of the Wisconsin union stripping bill?
Yeah, which went into effect yesterday.
Their Supreme Court, the horse that they put on the Supreme Court, he forced it through, and it went into law.
Yeah.
Within seconds of it being, the court putting down their decision,
mm-hmm.
thousands upon thousands of people started showing up at the Capitol.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They started hitting the streets by the thousands. They're talking about a general strike.
Oh, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it, you know. And
it's not some wild-eyed radical. It's firefighters, police, teachers who are talking about general strikes. Oh boy!
Games. I'd love to see it, Susan. I'd love to see it, and you know, that's also a sign of how emaciated the union movement is in America, because all we're down to is teachers, firefighters, nurses, and cops, right? We don't have the wider community involved in the
unions. Well, actually, in Wisconsin, you do.
Oh, I know.
Most of the people.
Wisconsin is the exception to the rule in the United States, and that's why Wisconsin is such a fundamental battleground. Because if you know anything you can do to destroy unions in Wisconsin, you'll be able to do it nationwide. Mm-hmm. I totally understand the history, and I followed you know the whole siege on the Capitol. You know, really, really closely. In fact, I was out on a big remote show out in the vineyards, and there's another American guy here who's a longtime cheesehead, and we just sat there talking about could not believe what was going on, you know, with these people that just wouldn't leave. But do we have the system is being the final dismantling of the whole system is being done right in front of our face right now with what's happened in Wisconsin. With, you know, the Walmart.
Well, I would.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that Walmart trade deal was just terrible. What I would do if I were a firefighter or a teacher, especially if I were a firefighter, I would say, fine, bud, burn.
You know, I've got a mate that I work with here who's a rural firefighter. You know, goes out and does the big bushfires here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, remember a few months back where that one town had
they stood back
and watched it burn, and it was like the worst thing that the firefighters ever had to do. And I asked my mate Christian about this, and he's going, man, he goes, I don't even know what it, he goes, I don't know if I could have stood back. And he said he imagined every firefighter there was just aghast because this is not something that you do, you know, for money, because most of the time it's a volunteer.
Well, it goes against your training, yeah.
Well, and I mean...
You don't become a firefighter for money.
Right.
Because
you know,
it wrecks your health. It ruins your everything physically. You do it because it's almost a calling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But did you hear about the case in California that was even worse?
No, I don't know. I might have missed this one.
This one went down the memory hole. This one was appalling. Due to budget cuts, the search and rescue people, the lifeguard people, did not have the equipment or the certification to put a man in the water to go in and save a man who was trying to commit suicide by drowning. They stood there for 2 hours until he drowned himself.
You know,
they weren't allowed to go in the water and get him because they didn't have the certification.
This is where you got to start to wonder, you know, how fundamentally sick is the society when, you know,
yeah, I know.
You know, okay, even if you remove the fact that this was, you know, a suicide attempt, you know, so I mean there is a bit of personal responsibility involved in this one, but right now we're going through all these extreme weather events, right? And so even, you know, if you're just planning on what you're going to need for the year, you're sitting there going, wouldn't you actually be investing in your emergency services just because you
would think so?
See that you've been needing them a lot lately? And, you know, I mean, it almost becomes sociopathic. This is what I, you know, like,
yeah,
you know. To just not give a shit.
Eric Cantor.
Whoops.
Eric Cantor. He went public and he said, "We can't provide disaster assistance for the people in Joplin unless we cut something else." Eric Cantor represents his district is in Richmond, which has been well known to get hit by hurricanes. Now, the next time a Cat 5 hurricane comes roaring ashore on his district, I'm going to be calling his office up and reminding him of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, okay, man. You know, what are you going to cut to fix up, you know? You actually asked me a question a little while ago, you know, like, do I think the U.S. is too far gone?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, I think so. And I also think that a lot of truth to the lie has come forward in the last decade. That even under Clinton, when things were good, we were still actually living under a system that couldn't be sustained. So
yeah, well, it's also we should also remember, and people should remember this. Wisconsin is in Tornado Alley. They had one entire town wiped out, completely wiped off the map.
They've been incredible this year.
This was quite a few years ago.
Oh.
Now they had people, you know, out there, Johnny on the spot with the disaster assistance, and they fell all over themselves collecting it. Now, the next time Wisconsin gets hit, we need to call a dear old Ryan's office and say, hey, guy, no, you can't have any. Disaster assistance is not allowed. Same for Texas, same for Ron Paul's district. During the debate, he came right out and said disaster assistance was immoral.
I mean, seriously, that is insane. That is like, you know, I don't believe in good and evil, heaven and hell. But, like, if you actually had to, you know, come up with an example of a statement that could be taken as evil, that would be one. Disaster assistance is immoral?
He represents a district in Texas. If it's not burning up or flooding out or being blown away, it's being buried by blizzards.
Or it's just a toxic, just absolute mess. Because, you know, after...
I mean, my God.
That place has become a voluntary, you know, dumping ground. When W became governor, he actually made Houston surpass Los Angeles as the most polluted city in America in like 4 years.
Lady Bird's ghost. I wouldn't be surprised if she hasn't gotten up out of her grave and started walking. Because Lady Bird loved Texas, and she loved the land.
Oh, yeah. That goes to something that I was saying yesterday, and Naomi Klein talked to in an interview that I was reading from, where, you know, somewhere along the line, the bloody planet we live on became a partisan issue.
Yeah, and it's wrong. It's wrong.
It didn't used to be.
I don't care what your faith is, what your party is. You don't foul your own nest.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean,
does this mean I get a toaster?
Yeah. Oh, there's so many of them. We got to come up with a new prize. I think... If I knew who the
Bridger, one of the things that Congress just did, they eliminated. You're gonna love this. They have eliminated food aid to the elderly, which means elderly and needy, which means things like food. The government provides help for Meals on Wheels. They're not going to be doing that. They're also cutting out government aid to food banks.
You know, I mean, I look at you know, cutting this stuff, and I hear that they're decimating the WIC program too. The women, infant,
yeah.
Children.
You know what they are keeping?
What?
You know what they are keeping?
What's that?
Oh, you're going to love this. I just loved it. They are keeping funding for an azalea collection to keep it and keep it going.
Holy crap.
Say what? That's what I said.
And while this is going on, the $12 billion that they're finally admitting to just losing in cash in Iraq, that's not a budget issue, but milk for a poor woman and child is.
Yeah.
The false equivalence of this stuff, or the not even inclusion in the debate of the big number, you know, they're all this stuff, everything that they're talking about could have been paid for 100 times over if we hadn't gotten into this bloody stupid mess of Iraq.
Yeah.
All
the GOP cuts to food aid equal one day of the Bush tax cuts for billionaires. One day.
How is it that we can't? Well, I got a thing about. Gene sent me this great piece about debate and some theories on debate. That there's some just interesting. I'm gonna get to it a bit later. But as we're talking about this, I'm just thinking about this piece where they're talking about how one of the things they talk about how certainty can be incredibly convincing no matter how far away from the truth it is.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow.
You know, if you've ever been visited a mental hospital and talked to someone who was sincerely, you know, who believed he was Jesus Christ, they're incredibly convincing because to their mind they are Christ.
Yeah.
Or Napoleon or, you know, whoever. Now, here's one thing that we need to remember historically. There was a period in time when the only time, the only information people got was through the churches.
Yeah.
The only education they got was through the churches.
Mm-hmm.
They were otherwise ignorant. They were basically, they basically, quote, knew their place, unquote.
Yeah.
It was known as the Middle Ages. It started in the Middle Ages. It lasted until after, long after the beginning of almost the, it started, what killed it was essentially the Industrial Age.
Right. Yeah.
Now, do you begin to see the parallel?
Well, I mean, if of this is the dumbing down of America over the last 30 years has been systematic.
And the church-based.
And that grabs
education.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Accelerates it.
Absolutely. I no argument. Absolutely no argument. You know. I
can remember. I remember I read a justification for this particular type of setup. It was during the Napoleonic era, and people were. They could not read. And some Anglican bishop said, oh, you don't need to know what's in the, be able to read the Bible. I'll tell you.
Yeah. You know, like Bill Hicks always says, you know, he says, I always love these speeches. And he's going, but I think what God meant to say was, like, going, wow, presumptuous, aren't we?
Yeah. But you see, if you cannot read the Bible for yourself,
you have to have someone read it to you, and they can tell you whatever they want.
Yeah, you have no way of knowing what's in there or not. You have no way of questioning. You have no way of finding other sources of information, and therefore you are trapped. If you want to fight this creeping, insidious takeover of our society, people, buy books, buy textbooks, get ready to start your own underground schools.
Well, excuse me, I there's definitely something, I don't know about the underground schools, but parents can definitely do in a good way what I think some of the religious nutters who, you know, start their little homeschools because, you know, mm-hmm. you know, don't show me science. It says that the earth is more than 6,000 years old, you know, because I'll just say Jeebus did it. And, you know, we can do the same thing in the other way by teaching kids what they're not being told that they need to know. You know, I mean...
Yeah, but how many people do it?
I know. I mean, this kind of goes to, you know, David yesterday talking about, you know, his whole progressive army thing, which got a whole bunch of people up in arms. But what you're talking about...
Me included.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, David does stuff like that. He'll throw things out there to stir the pot. And I think it was more inflammatory sounding than he intended, or, you know, but it's going along this same line about the fact that there are just so many people that don't actually have the education or mm-hmm. have the knowledge base to actually even debate many subjects seriously.
Knowledgeably, yeah.
So it falls into the same thing, like we all want to get the same thing, you know. And this again goes to this debate thing, which about debating, which they're saying that it's not really about winning an argument. In other words, getting to the truth. It's actually mm-hmm. driven it's still by the winning. Same winning or losing that would be in a fight.
Yeah.
And
now, if I had my way. One of the things I would find is find some way to set up a school for hackers.
Mm. I think the hackers do pretty well teaching one another.
Yeah. The thing is, hacking for a specific reason. Hacking so that you can put information out, not so you can cause destruction, but so you can go in, get information that they don't want you to know, and publicize it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, yeah. But you go and set that thing up in the wide open. You're going to have people knocking on your door real quick.
oh yeah, that's why it would have to be an underground school. But
like
teaching stuff like science or history from the real perspective, from the way it was actually happened, hey, you can do that. All you need is the books, and all you need to do is go back, find yourself an antique bookstore,
yeah.
and get the old textbooks.
Yeah, well, and... You know, I mean, there was that piece on Monday that I was talking about from The Guardian, where one of the lawmakers there is trying to push something about getting back to the science and science. In other words, you're not allowed to talk about global warming in a school science class. Let's get back to the basics like gravity and this idea that you're able to limit a subject like science down into something that you can fit in a shoebox of ideas. And
oh Lord.
Yeah, you know, he's pushing to remove any discussion of topical scientific subjects in relation to what they're studying. And just the whole concept of that to me in regards to teaching science. Everything about science is about explaining our world to us.
Yeah.
So if you can't relate science to what's going on in the real world, how is it science?
Yeah, and has this dude ever thought, guys, what's going to happen when you're mid repair and you can't repair them?
Yep.
Duh. I suggest you start reading science fiction. You would not have these problems if you ever read any science fiction, because all these questions would have been answered in fiction form. It's called The Collapse of Civilization, otherwise known as a Malthusian solution.
Science fiction has probably worked these grand issues more than any other genre, I reckon. Just due to what it is, you know, thinking about the future. And so someone's going to have to go, where are we now and where might we end up? And, you know, if you're honest about that and include things, see, this is another thing about like debate in the United States. And I find here with the climate debate being twisted here at the moment is people seem to have this incredible ability to chicken pick the you know, or cherry pick the chicken pick. That's the way you play guitar. Cherry pick. only the factoids that forward their
fit
argument
their little...
and will not yeah. hear anything that goes against that, even though they actually yeah. know better. And so this then, does this fall to the most horrible form of willful ignorance that can actually be?
Well, there is, there's a term for that. The Darwin Awards.
Yeah. That's short term. We're talking long term here. Actual development.
Yeah, I
know
but right. I know, but if you insist on denying the fact that the ice cap is melting and pretty soon the city that you're sitting in is going to flood, and you keep insisting on sitting there and everybody else is left and you drown, sorry, that's called a Darwin Award. Sorry.
Can we actually get around this, you know, and there's been a couple times I've heard the discussion, you know, if you want to just talk about environmental issues, you know, sometimes getting things to actually happen, not saying that I want to live under a system like this, but China stands a better chance of moving forward on a lot of these issues than the United States, the UK, Australia, Europe, because they can just say, from now on, this is what we're going to do. And they are doing stuff like that, you know. We don't hear about that because they actually, I think the Chinese, much more than the Americans, see our very own machine that we're making all this money on needs energy mm-hmm. to run. The energy will run out.
Yeah.
And whether this global warming thing or not actually pans out, there's business in that too. And
yeah,
so there are
exactly.
massive development
solar. You could make money off it.
Yeah, and so again, we'll be left in the dust as far as a lot of those, you know, new energy jobs, you know. And, you know, this is something where, you know, old Barack Obama didn't do too bad talking about this, you know, in the campaign and other stuff that he's actually tried to talk about. But you know, we can't have any of that, you know, actually, you know, get a leg up, you know, so that ends up going nowhere. But so what's going to end up, what's going to end up happening? Just like everything else, all the manufacture of all that and all those manufacturing jobs are going to be in China, you know, and about the only thing that they won't be able to do is actually build wind turbines because of the size and the shipping. You know, it's about the only major renewable infrastructure that will guarantee American manufacturing is wind turbines because of the sheer size. They build them on site very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know,
I just,
Siemens sends stuff over in components, and then you got to build it.
I'm sincerely hoping that sooner or later one of these actually what I'm praying for is the entire right-wing religion industry will decide we can't wait, so we're just going to rapture early and mass suicide.
Oh, you know, it's just only if the rapture had only been true.
I'm allowed to dream.
Yeah. We all have to have our fantasies. All right, Susan, I'm going to really good talking to you. I'm going to head off and open up the phone lines and move on to some other stuff.
But
I do appreciate everything you do, and it's always good to talk to you.
No problem. Give my limp to Gail.
All right. Back at you. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that, of course, is the blogger for this program, Susan. And David from Maine reminded me of kind of an oversight. While I've been off air, we lost Gil Scott-Heron, who always claimed to never really be a political songwriter, but hell, sure seemed like he was. So I tell you what, just hang for a bit on the phone calls. We're gonna play a couple of tracks here from Mr. Gil Scott here and to finish out the hour, and then we'll come back and fire it back up and get into some more of this crazy religion nonsense and some other stuff. And I really want to get into this thing about debate. It's a really great piece that at the Times. There's a link at today's show post. About debate, and it's just about the different schools of thought on theorizing about debate. And some interesting stuff in there, and we'll come back and talk about that, because I think it all applies to this seeming lack of ability of the American system to actually move forward. That it just seems to stay in constant, like it's in neutral, because opposing gears are constantly fighting one another. It's just crazy. But anyway, we'll start things here with The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, the classic, and then move on to a couple of other things. Ain't such thing as Superman, and Winter in America, if there's enough time, as we roll into the top of the hour. So here you go. You're listening to The Horn. Thanks to those folks who have thrown into the kitty this week. We're way behind, and Bob's on the road, so please, if you can, head to headonradionetwork.com and throw something in the old kitty, because we've got lots going on, and might actually hear from Bob soon. He's finally in Minneapolis. So here you go. Gil Scott Heron on The Horn.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and ship out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading the charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mays pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29th District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Riddles of the end. You have placed your footprints on the everlasting sands of time. Yeah, so tell me why can't you understand that there ain't no such thing as a Superman? There ain't no such thing as a Superman. You was on the now. You went to see baby your ball. It fell down to the ground. Yes, and you was out there on the corner when vehicle went blind. Are you alone? Understand that if we're gonna win, we've got to get together, stay together, be together, stick together. So tell me why can't you understand that there ain't no such thing as Superman? There ain't no such thing as Superman.
Yes, and all of it. People know it's winter. Winter in America. And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows what to say. Save your soul. Lord knows from winter in America. The Constitution, a noble piece of paper, with free society, struggle but they died in vain. And now democracy is a ragtime on the corner, hoping for some rain. It's looking like he's hoping for some rain. And I see the robins perched in barren treetops. They're watching last ditch races marching across the floor. But just like the peace signs that vanished in our dreams, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. Now it's winter. It's winter in America. And all of the hillers have been killed or betrayed. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Winter in America. And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows what to say. Save your soul from winter in America.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, 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 hey. Welcome back, everybody. Hour two of Head On with Bob Kincaid. With me, John Fox, coming to you from Sydney, Australia. It's still kind of early in the morning here. Everyone, guy sounds kind of like he's a little slow. It's because it's early down here. and thanks, David, for reminding me that I needed to play some Gil Scott Heron yesterday. Awesome songs and great lyrics. And yeah, I let it run a little over the hour because, well, how do you turn off winter in America, especially with the subject matter that we're constantly dealing with on this here network? And this here network needs your support. So if you haven't kicked in this month, and you can, please go to headonradionetwork.com and hit the contribute link or go down that sidebar thing and real quick PayPal, you can throw whatever in there. And like I said, there were a few people threw in a couple of decent sized ones and a couple of nifty 250 types. And we do appreciate all of it because without that, we couldn't do this. And Bob couldn't be in Minneapolis and we'll be hearing from him. I think he's going to be a busy guy down there this time with the release of The Last Mountain, the film on mountaintop removal mining. And so, you know, but I'm going to be really interested to see. And like I said on Monday, I won't get into it. I won't rehash it. I promise. I'll play nice. But last year, this network was not treated very well at Netroots Nation, but I guess maybe with us being part of an entourage with Robert Kennedy Jr., maybe this time we won't get dissed. But then again, we're not broadcasting the event this year. And anyway, what a difference a year makes! Woohoo! Anyway, I've got some more prayer meeting kind of stuff hanging here. And I believe Gene sent me this from a place called religionclause.blogspot, written by Howard. He talks about, I guess, in that Republican debate. I really don't know if you could call it a debate. I haven't seen it, so I really can't judge. But from the clips that I've seen, you know, it just really seemed to be a very weird event. But they got into church and state issues. So Here it says, last night, and there's a link to this on the blog. Last night's CNN debate among seven Republican candidates for the presidential nomination included an extensive exchange on separation of church and state and attitudes towards American Muslims. Here's a lengthy excerpt from the full transcript. Question from the audience. I'm just wondering what your definition of the separation of church and state is and how it will affect your decision making. Wow. That doesn't read like it was... Here's a card. Here's the question you will ask. So the moderator throws it to Pawlenty first. He says, well, the protections between the separation of church and state were designed to protect people of faith from government, not government from people of faith. This is a country that in our founding document says we're a nation that's founded under God, and the privileges and blessings that we have are from our Creator. They are not from members of Congress. And they're not from our county commissioner. So, okay, T-Paw. T-Paw? Hey, don't T-Paw! So, you're telling me here that the separation of church and state is only one way. It's only one way. And he continues, he says, and 39 of the 50 states have in very early phases of the phrases of the constitutions, language like Minnesota has in its preamble. It says this, we the people of Minnesota grateful to God for our civil and religious liberties. And so the founding fathers understood that the blessings that we have as a nation come from our Creator and we should stop and say thanks and express gratitude for that. I embrace that. Followed by cheers and applause. Holy crap. So basically saying that there is no separation of church and state. The government can't tell you how to practice a religion. But that religion can have as much influence in government as it wants. Problem with that is it runs into a little bit of a problem. That sets up problems with equal protection under the law. So King continues. Let's spend a little time talking about it. Senator, start with you. Just what role does faith play? Are there decisions, certain issues where you might just, let's meet with my advisors? What does my gut say? And others where you might retreat to have a moment of private prayer? Santorum responds, I'm someone who believes that you approach issues using faith and reason. Faith and reason? Sorry, they're a bit mutually exclusive. It's a bit faith or reason. When it comes to issues of this real world, I would prefer reason. And he continues, and if your faith is pure and your reason is right, how about having your reason being right first? Can we at least come up with that compromise there? So if your faith is pure and your reason is right, right might not be correct. That might be right for right wing. They'll end up in the same place. I think the key to the success of this country, how we all live together, because we are a very diverse country, Madison called it the perfect remedy, which was to allow everybody, people of faith and no faith, to come in and make their claims in the public square, to be heard, have those arguments, and not to say because you're not a person of faith, you need to stay out. Because you have strong faith convictions, your opinion is invalid. Just the opposite. We get along because we know that all of our ideas are allowed in and tolerated. That's what makes America work. Something not add up there? But and after that, Ron Paul starts to, you know, connect faith with morality. Okay, and then, you know, I mean, who are these people pandering to? Well, I mean, I know who they're pandering to. But it's just, it's grotesque. It's grotesque. Then it gets really weird. While we're on the topic of faith and religion, the next question goes to Mr. Kane. You recently said that you would not appoint a Muslim to your cabinet, and you kind of back off a little bit. And you said you would first want to know if they're committed to the Constitution. You express concern that, quote, a lot of Muslims are not totally dedicated to this country. Are American Muslims as a group less committed to the Constitution than, say, Christian or Jews? Holy crap! How the hell do you ask a question like that? And Kane steps right up. First, the statement was, I would be comfortable with a Muslim in my administration, not that I wouldn't appoint one. That's the exact transcript. And I would not be comfortable, because you have peaceful Muslims and then you have militant Muslims. Those are trying to kill us. And so, when I said I wouldn't be comfortable, I was thinking about the ones that are trying to kill us, number one. Secondly, yes, I do not believe in Sharia law in American courts. I believe in American laws in American courts, period. There have been instances. Cheers and applause. There have been instances. Oh, here we go down the Sharia law thing. There have been instances in New Jersey. There was an instance in Oklahoma where Muslims did try to influence court decisions with Sharia law. I was simply saying very emphatically, American laws in American courts. You sure didn't deal with that whole issue about Muslims being less dedicated to the Constitution. What the hell is that? What the hell kind of statement is that? It's actually really similar to George Bush the First. When he made that statement that said that people like me, people of no faith, which I hate that description of it, shouldn't even be considered citizens, shouldn't even have the right to vote. And they don't get the idea, you know, like T-Paul. And his whole, you know, separation of church and state was to protect the church from the state. No, it wasn't. Well, I mean, it was. That's part of it. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, we were always taught that, you know, separation of church and state for the equal protection of both. Doesn't seem that hard. And because of jerks like Pawlenty, I think is why here in Australia, when they did our constitution here, and they dealt with the separation of church and state, they took it one step further. You know, it wasn't just freedom of religion. I also have a freedom from religion. Because that little extra statement keeps pandering jerks like Pawlenty from trying to weasel around something as straightforward and crystal clear as the separation of church and state. It's just bizarre. And this was supposed to be a debate, right? So, like, most of what I've caught from this has been seven Republican wannabes all debating a president that isn't there with a narrative that is most definitely questionable. A moderator who's supposed to be from a news organization, who's just kind of like letting this pandering go on and on and on and on, seems to be feeding it. Instead of... And see, from memory, even when the Democrats were in opposition and we were having primaries before elections, the Democrats not only in their debates would, you know, counter the current administration, which you would expect, you're in opposition, they also spend a lot of time debating one another. But here, you basically had, oh, I've got a really vile way of describing it, and I don't want to use it. A circle of self-gratification. All going, Obama's bad. He's a failure. He gets an F. He's a one-term president. Like a whole bunch of little children. With the supposed adult in the room being king. Feeding what is just a big cheerleading session. And still, even though this was supposedly real candidates, you know, including Newt Gingrich, which this guy's got to be getting off the map sometime soon. The only reason I could see him still being in the race is that he's got some money to make up, and he's got a way of doing that with selling some DVDs or books. But I've still seen less coverage of the debate between the actual running candidates than I have seen of people who aren't declared, who are running around the country in buses, pulling the steam. I mean, being a vacuum to a declared candidate. I mean, that bit what Palin did to Romney. What was it, last week? You know, fellow Republican launching his campaign, you're not even declared, and you're going to go show up at the same place all, you know, with your bus and on motorcycles or whatever the hell that bullshit was. Whoops. And she's not paying a price for this yet somehow. That is what amazes me. I don't know how she's getting away with some of this stuff. Are the Republicans actually that scared of her? Or is she, again, a really useful distraction that will end up at the election with having not debated anything, not dealt with any of the issues in the marketplace of ideas? I don't know. It's just weird stuff. It just pisses me off. Pardon me. Because, you know, I just think we should be better than this. I'm going to take a little break, and I'm going to come back and talk about this reason piece. I'm kind of distracted by it because it's this whole thing about reason and debate. It's really just kind of rattling my brain. But for the moment, We need some music. So, we'll have this. Yeah, we'll go there. We'll go there. We'll go there. Stick around. The best bits of this article, and we'll have a chat about why possibly reason and debate doesn't actually win the day. Some interesting concepts. Anyway, stick around. This is a bit of Alice in Chains off the self-titled Three-Legged Dog record. This is Goddamn. Okay, really great piece. Patricia Cohen at the New York Times has a piece. Reason seen more as weapon than path to truth. For centuries, thinkers have assumed that the uniquely human capacity for reasoning has existed to let people reach beyond mere perception and reflex in search of truth. Rationality allowed a solitary thinker to blaze a path to philosophical, moral, and scientific enlightenment. Now some researchers are suggesting that reason evolved for a completely different purpose, to win arguments. Rationality by this yardstick, and irrationality too, but we'll get to that, is nothing more or less than a servant of the hardwired compulsion to triumph in the debating arena. According to this view, bias, lack of logic, and other supposed flaws that pollute the stream of reason are instead social adaptations that enable one group to persuade and defeat another. And here's one of the lines that just struck me. Certitude works, however sharply it may depart from the truth. So, does this explain why, as in simplistic form, I see our side and their side trying to have a debate, and I'm not understanding why me coming with all this backing facts, you know, climate change, how welfare payments in hard times can actually bolster economies. You know, you can just come with all this ammunition. And yet, it seems as though there's like a scoreboard at the end of who got more shots in rather than whose argument stands up. And where we, the people, keep wanting to have some sort of reasoned debate, and we see the system do nothing but meaningless point score. So it continues, the idea labeled the argumentative theory of reasoning is the brainchild of French cognitive social scientists and has stirred excited discussion and appalled dissent among philosophers, political scientists, educators, and psychologists, some of whom say it offers profound insight into the way people think and behave. The Journal of Behavioral and Brain Sciences devoted its April issue to debates over the theory, which participants challenging everything from the definition of reason to the origins of verbal communication. Reasoning doesn't have this function of helping us to get better beliefs or make better decisions, says Hugo Mercier, who is a co-author of the journal article, and Dan Sperber. It was a purely social phenomenon. It evolved to help us convince others and to be careful when others try to convince us. Truth and accuracy were beside the point. So is this trying to explain why when we try to challenge someone who says, you know, the Bush tax cuts have no impact on the deficit? And you or I return to this person with all the math that shows, well, I can show you where it's responsible for this much of the increased deficit. See, it's right here. And very often, your adversary, if this thinking is right, gets their backup. Right? It evolved to help us convince others and to be careful when others try to convince us. So is this the cynicism mechanism? Yeah, I'll hear you, but I'm not going to buy it just because you tell me so. And I don't want to read the whole article, but I want to scroll down to a bit down. Here we go. And because they get into actually where they how they think this applies to the American. What is revolutionary about argumentative theory is that it presumes that since reason has a different purpose to win over an opposing group, flawed reasoning is an adaptation in itself, useful in bolstering debating skills. Mr. Mercer, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Pennsylvania, contends that attempts to rid people of biases have failed because reasoning does exactly what it is supposed to do, help win an argument. People have been trying to reform something that works perfectly well, he said, as if they had decided that hands were made for walking and that everybody should be taught that. Think of the American judicial system, in which the prosecutors and defense lawyers each have a mission to construct the strongest possible argument. The belief is that this process will reveal the truth, just as the best idea will triumph in what John Stuart Mill called the marketplace of ideas. So they're even saying that flawed reasoning can be used as a tool to win an argument. And so is this what we constantly see with, you know, climate change deniers? Yeah, they suffer cognitive dissonance. One of my favorite terms. That and willful ignorance. But Mr. Mercer and Mr. Sperber have skeptics as well as fans. Darcia Navarez, an associate professor in psychology for the University of Notre Dame and a contributor to the journal Debates, said this theory fits into evolutionary psychology mainstream thinking at the moment, that everything we do is motivated by selfishness and manipulating others, which is, in my view, crazy. To Ms. Navarez, reasoning is something that develops from experience. It's a subset of what we really know. And much of what we know cannot be put into words, she explained, pointing out that language evolved relatively late in human development. The way we use our minds to navigate the social and general worlds involves a lot of things that are implicit, not explainable. The way we use our mind. On the other side of the divide, Jonathan Haidt, a psychology professor at the University of Virginia, says of Mr. Sperber and Mr. Mercer, their work is important and points to some ways that the limits of reason can be overcome by putting people together in the right way, in particular to challenge people's confirmation biases. And where's I'm looking for this thing they talk about. The reason why it fails in the American political system. Let me just see if I can find this. They kind of just talk about the group is too big. Bear with me a second. Here we go. Mr. Mercer is enthusiastic about the theory's potential applications. He suggests, for example, that children may have an easier time learning abstract topics in mathematics or physics if they're put into a group and allowed to reason through a problem together. This is like kind of what we do on the horn here. We get together and we have a big old chat about it, right? Not necessarily armed to win a battle. He has also recently been at work applying the theory to politics. In a new paper, he and Helena Landamore, an assistant professor of political science at Yale, proposed that arguing and assessment skills employed by groups make democratic debate the best form of government for evolutionary reasons, regardless of philosophical or moral rationalities. How, then, do the academics explain the endless stalemates in Congress? It doesn't seem to work in the U.S., Mr. Mercer conceded. He and Ms. Landamore suggest that reasoned discussion works best in smaller cooperative environments rather than in America's high decibel adversarial system, in which partisans seek to score political advantage rather than arrive at a consensus. Exactly, Tim. Like he says, look at Fox News. I think that is all. Bears repeating. They suggest that reasoned discussion works better in smaller cooperative environments rather than in America's high decibel adversarial system. And that's exactly what it is. It's set up to be adversarial. Republican, Democrat, Coke or Pepsi, Letterman, Leno. Because individual reasoning mechanisms work best when used to produce and evaluate arguments during a political deliberation, said Mercer and Ms. Landmoor. As a practical matter, endorsed the theory of deliberative democracy, an approach that arose in the 1980s, which envisions cooperative town hall-style deliberations, championed by the philosophers John Rawls and Jürgen Habermas. This sort of collaborative form can overcome the tendency of groups to polarize at the extremes and deadlock. Anyone who enjoys, they finish up, anyone who enjoys spending endless hours debating ideas should appreciate their views. Mr. Mercer and Ms. Bieber write, though, even as they note, this, of course, is not an argument for or against the theory. So, they're basically kind of, and I've always wondered this, you know, the system itself, the way we operate it. Is it just doomed to this deadlock all the time, all the time? And is the fact that our rational reasoning, if it's driven by something other than wanting to win over the other side, but rather it comes from more, because there's a difference. It's shades of the same thing. Winning someone's opinion over to your way of thinking is winning. It is defeating the other, but is it actually a defeat? Because both have won. And I keep saying, you know, portraying myself as always being right. I am. No, I'm not. But, you know, I have to look at things from my own point of view when I've been in situations as described. So And the idea, like, you know, this idea of the public forum. I mean, you know, we go back a century and a bit, you know, and, you know, as Lincoln and whoever he ran against, you know, they had debates that went on for like, what, 5-6 hours? So, you know, is this kind of, along the idea of these town forums, where you get people into a group to actually discuss an idea, not debate it, discuss it. And there is actually a difference. To discuss, you know, implies an openness. So, you know, I don't know. There might be something in this that, you know, it's instead of rational rationality reason, it's actually argumentative. Argumentative. Got any thoughts on any of this? If you want to get in on the program, 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. And let's do some more prayer meeting music. Because that's what I do when I do radio, is a bit of music, as well as all the conversation and everything else. Search up God in 30,000 songs. Could be interesting. Where do we end up? I know what I want. That one. Haven't played any of this even personally in a while. Usually in my rotation. I like people who take risks, and sometimes even those people do things that I think are crap too, but that's part of the, you know, it's David and I have constant conversations about Prince, who he's a massive fan of. And I'm a real big fan of some of the stuff he's done. And I do appreciate some of the risks he's taken. Because you get interesting stuff, and someone who I think is very experimental and very, very cool is Miss Tori Amos. And one of the most grand sounding pianos you can ever find. She plays nothing but a Bösendorfer. Beautiful instruments. We'll be back in a minute. If you got something to add to this, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811, or the email rose into John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back.
I can't explain to you why, but I find the guitars in that song hilarious. I find them hilarious. If it had been me in the studio being asked to play those squeaks and squeals and stuff, I would have been pissing myself. It's just so funny. Way back in the beginning of the show, when Susan rang in, she got talking about Governor Perry. I kind of started reading something from a whole bunch of clergy bucking up against him, and I didn't really set that up very well because I didn't read you what they were pissed off about. And here's what it is. From the Texas Freedom Network, Texas Governor Rick Perry has a long history of using faith as a political weapon, as Susan was speaking to earlier, to divide voters. But his decision to host a Christians-only prayer event in Houston on August 6th with a vicious hate group is beyond appalling. The governor and his staff claim that the Houston event is meant to bring the nation together in prayer. But the event is designed to promote a conservative evangelical Christianity, a perspective certainly not shared by all Christians. And the governor has asked that the American Family Association to organize it. The Southern Poverty Law Center has identified the AFA as a hate group on par with Fred, God Hates Fags, Phelps, Westboro Baptist Church, the Ku Klux Klan, and the Aryan Nations. Instead of uniting people of faith in prayer for a nation, the event will actually sharpen divisions among Americans along religious and political lines. Now, there's something much more sinister about this. And what I find more sinister about this is the country's in trouble. We got this heathen at the helm. We got to bring America to pray. We got to come together to pray for America in its time of need. And so this is praying, different pray with an E. I'm probably the poorest and the most ignorant. And those that are the most down on their luck going, come pray for me. It ain't your fault. It's that horrible comic Kenyon. And we got to pray America back to be right. And a sitting governor is going to see, this is that protection of church and state thing. You can't be using the government to promote a particular religion. This is a definitive breaking of that. The American Family Association. Absolutely frightening. And this is one of the guys. This is one of the guys that supposedly the people on the right are wanting to beg to run, like Chris Christie. And as a guy who used to have a weight problem, I think I can say this. He's like the poster boy for the fat, rich pig right winger. I find that man grotesque. It's like Jabba the Hutt as your governor. So Governor Rick Perry, Mr. We're going to secede. Now it's come together and pray for the nation because the nation has lost God. And we'll have it sponsored by a bunch of hateful bastards. Like the American Family Association. And I think this group of folks have nailed it. And if you want to make some noise about this, there's actually an organized form letter thingy at tfn.org. basically telling him, this is pretty weird. This is pretty wrong. I am deeply troubled that you and your office as governor of the state are, of Texas to promote this event, blah, 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 blah. And as I say in here, the idea that a governor's office can pick and choose the faiths that will be favored at a public event, that is completely, 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 completely against the whole legal idea of separation of church and state. That's making an outright mockery of it. That's absolutely horrible. And so, you know, we'll have the debate on whether this was legal or not, but we won't actually talk about how kind of disgusting it is. And how creepy it is. Because, I mean, that's basically what he's saying. Gotta pray for a broken and godless America. Scary. And this is supposedly one of these people that the right wing is looking to. Very scary. Anyway, we're going to take a top of the hour break and searching God here. Let's play some Joni Mitchell. And we'll come back. We got an hour left in the program, so light up them phone lines. 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. And yeah. Joni Mitchell, God Must Be a Boogeyman. You're listening to The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com. America's liberal voice.
Thank you. Which would it be, Mingus 102 or 103? Which one do you think he'd want the world to see? Well, world opinion's not a lot of help when a man's only trying to find out how to feel about himself. In the plan, oh, the cock ain't plan. God must be a boogeyman. He is 3.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, everybody. Hour 3 here, Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am John Fox, filling in for the band from down here, down under in the great brown land, which has been really wet. And hey, I think the sun's out. Holy crap, I haven't seen that in a few days. Oh, that'll be nice. Start drying this place out. You know, when you have those runs of rain, some of you guys in the Midwest in the States know this well. It's just been so wet that everything's damp. Ah.
Here comes the sun!
Hopefully start drying up some of them floodwaters just north of us. I think we get lucky with where we're situated. Tend to get storm systems cut in half, even though we've been getting hammered. We haven't been getting hammered like some. Anyway, got an hour left. You want to get in on the program, 304-574-7811. And, you know, I've been all around the block today. I want to read more. Maybe I'll look into it overnight. It was, oh, wow, that's really abrupt fate. I should fix that. says the engineer. I want to read more about this argumentative theory versus rational reason. Because it definitely feels like that rational reasoning is just nowhere to be found these days. Every time you look for some, it's like, you know, there should be some here. There used to be. It's all gone now. And has it always been a thing of that it's actually much more of a weapon? And am I just slow on coming to this? I don't know. It's the problem when you assume that all right people think like yourself. Someone in the chat room was hearing the CityNet ad and was saying ads, and that's actually something that I guess, you know, just with the way Bob goes these days of just, you know, starting off in fifth gear and not stop until the end of the 3 hours. We've always been running that, but, you know, it's not like a paid commercial situation. It's more like a little bit of scratching their back very lightly for the fact that they scratch ours pretty well by supplying us all the technical connection stuff. And, you know, as far as the internet connections and the phone lines, that stuff. So they give us a really good break, because when we first moved to them, geez, when we first started launching this project way back 6 years ago or whatever, it was the great unknown. And Bob had this ultra, ultra, ultra expensive T1 line. And it was supposed to be a guaranteed big 1 meg up and 1 meg down. And anytime a dog took a wee in the road, that connection would fall over. And it was one of these horrible contract things. Cost bucket loads. I think about the money that went down the tubes for that connection. For, God, I don't remember, you know, where's Bob when I need him, you know, a year, almost two. You know, wasn't their fault that bloody Comcast or Verizon or whoever the hell it was just absolutely horrible. I mean, it was awful. And yeah, at some stage we got out of that. And, you know, I mean, we've had issues here and there, but, you know, actually CityNet's done pretty good by us. And so, yeah, you know, and it's a West Virginia outfit, so why not? And so, yeah, you know, and of course, you know, the Coal River Mountain Watch spots that we always run because, well, you know, we're kind of attached at some sort of body part somewhere, somewhere on Bob. And Coal River Mountain Watch, I mean, that's the whole reason Bob's not on air this week, is because he's in Minneapolis at Netroots Nation being treated this year like a human being, dealing with some, you know, panel discussions and whatnot for The Last Mountain, which I'm looking forward to seeing myself. And in fact, any of the Australians that are listening to the program, Bob and I are talking about arranging a screening of the film down here, like maybe Sydney or something. So like on cue, I start talking about Australians, and I look up at the chat room, and Phase 5 is coming in the door. Any of the Australians that listen to Bob or myself, If you'd be interested in an organized screening of The Last Mountain, drop me an email. John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com, or drop Bob an email. Because I'm gonna start looking into it, like this week. And, because there's similar things going on here. I mean, we don't have the mountain ranges to blow off, but, some of the strip mines, huge strip mines, and it's all just done with explosives. It's no different here. I mean, if this place is the Saudi Arabia of coal, much more than the United States is. So we went from ads to founding of the network, internet problems to. Like I said, got a little bit of time left, got about 40 minutes left. If you want to get in on the program, 304-574-7811, 304-574-7811, and just more nonsense. See, again, you know, I say in my humble opinion, every religion, and to me there's no exception, is, for lack of a better term, racist. It's exclusionary. We are chosen. We are better than you. We are God's chosen. You are not. We will go to heaven and, you know, eternal fucking takeout or whatever. And you will not. It's divisive in its very nature, and you know, you just have to see things like, you know, this thing's been around everywhere in the last couple of days. You know, Bible cited as reason for kicking gay men out of public pool. Gay men swimming. How do you know they're gay men? Activists in Kentucky are planning a peaceful response after two gay men with developmental and intellectual disabilities were kicked out of a public pool. Ah, here we go. Picking on the weak. A maintenance technician reportedly cited the Bible while telling the two men they couldn't swim at the Pavilion, a government-funded recreational facility in Hazard, Kentucky. Hazard. We own this place, and I can tell you to leave if we want to, the couple was told, according to the Kentucky. And staff came in. And they were informed that gay people weren't allowed to swim there. That by being gay and swimming in the swimming place, they were breaking the law. Only an ignorant person could make that work in their head. You're gay, I don't like it, I can tell you to get out of a public place. Who are these people? And even worse, you know, people have disabilities too? Intellectual disabilities? So what an asshole.
I'm gonna fuck with the gay retards.
Yeah, Faze, you know, it's like you have to pass a gay straight test before going swimming. You know, next question I got, how tight is that guy's closet door shut? Yeah, separate but equal. You're right, CLD. Gay people swim better than straights. But, I mean, this is just, you know... this is one of the most simple concepts in law, and it's got to be simple if I feel like I understand it. But the concept of equal protection. And all of this divisive stuff that the religion industries it's all just division. And again, like, you know, I say, you know, we are chosen, you are not. So I can be here, you can't. Swim somewhere else there, fag boy. And I find it more appalling that these two gentlemen have other difficulties as well. You know, as though the world wasn't fucking with them enough. Sorry, broadcast people. But, you know, as if the world wasn't cruel enough to them. They're going to have this dimwit.
I read it in the Bible, you got against out.
I mean, and you take this to the extreme. This is, it's not even that far. This is how you get to, you know, God hates fags. And I don't know if any of you, how many of you ever caught, you know, back when Guy James was on the air, which I really miss because I loved Guy. Good old style Democrat he is. And he had the Phelps daughter on his program. And I'm telling you, this was one of the most hateful, horrible things that I've ever seen. Hey, you know what, folks? Hold on a second. We actually have a bit of a plumbing problem in this house. And I think I hear the plumber. So I'm going to go deal with them. And I'll be right back. You're listening to The Horn. Flowers. Bloody love this band. Always have. Just genius. Any band with that kind of B3. Nice. Off the album, Bringing Down the Horse. God Don't Make Lonely Girls. The Wallflowers. Awesome. So, sorry about that interruption there. I did have to kind of find out what was going on, because our water heater blew up yesterday. And I heard a plumber. And I went out there and happily found out that, yes, it's been all fixed. So it won't be an icicle shower after the show. Nothing like losing the water heater in winter. It's not so bad in the summer. I thought I heard this bang the other day. I got done with the show, yesterday. And I'm sitting here in the studio and I'm watching MSNBC or something. And, you know, I really had one of those spooked out moments here, this crack. What the hell have the cats knocked over now? So, you know, going from room to room, window to window, looking around, looking, you know, seeing the ladder falling down, you know, nothing. Ah, then there's the delayed reaction. Go to the kitchen sink. Well, the hot water doesn't seem to be as hot as it used to be. We might have a problem. any chance of putting in solar hot water at my place? Yeah, if I owned the place. Yeah, in fact, the water heater itself, you know, if I had panels, I could run them off it. It is convoitable. You know, I don't own the place, so not really an investment. I'd love to be able to make it. You know, and that's actually a real issue that I think needs to kind of be dealt with. Because, you know, no matter how slow and, you know, kind of like, you know, dragging their feet, bloody, you know, the governments are about climate change legislation and, you know, cleaning things up. There's a lot of people around the world who are trying to do what they can to, you know, cut back on their carbon footprint or, you know, trying to be cleaner about the way they live their lives, in reference to, you know, the mark left on this planet. And if you own your home, there's a lot you can actually do. If you've got a little bit of money, and, you know, you can say, hey, you know what, I'm going to put 10 grand into a solar array. Because, you know, free electricity, how cool. I'm going to be here for that long. Bang. You know, and pump it into the grid. All that. Cool. But a lot of people, and more all the time, as other inequality factors continue to move the way they're moving. There's a lot of people who rent, and a lot of people who live in apartment complexes and whatnot, you know. And it's not so easy to go out there and say, you know, go, I'm going to put solar panels outside the windows of my, you know, two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan. Kind of hard to do. And I'm not sure exactly how, you know, you get around this, but, you know, I mean, you know, I put in as many bloody solar lights or whatever outside as I can, you know. But I'm not going to do anything permanent installation because, you know, right now this place is up for sale. We don't know whether we're going to have to move in 6 months. So, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, as Fave mentions, and so there are things limiting people's choices that, you know, if the government's not doing it, at least you can take personal action, you know, and that's something that I've always believed in and you know, for a long time, when we were living at the old place, because we had access to 100% renewables and a sign-up program, which is no longer available because there's other things about to happen. And but I was running the studio here off of 100% renewables. You know, I was paying a little extra for it. You know, that was something that I could do. And there needs to be more opportunities like that for non-owners. Because if you're an owner, you can do whatever you want. You can also, and you can also do a thing of like, I'll do half now and half later, you know, make it a project. Can't really do it. Sorry, just trying to read something Kath is talking about in Canada. If you're a property owner, you can get solar through a rental program. You sell back to the grid and offset your bill. Yeah. We have a similar thing here, and it needs some work because the state government here set a feed-in tariff that was totally unsustainable. It was just giving people way too much and refused to fix it because they had bought a lot of votes with it. And now there's a whole legal mess. And with us privatizing some of our electricity, it gets all into legal battles and all really, really weird. And Phase 5, who's one of the Australians that listens to the network, and we have a few, mentioned, you know, he's saying, oh, you know, get solar hot water on every Australian roof, blah, 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 bugger this carbon tax. And I'm like, no, don't bugger this carbon tax thing. And I'm catching a lot of flack about this because I think people aren't really taking – they're buying into – corporate models that don't really add up. Right now, our prime minister, who took over from her own party in kind of what was a mining coup, is pushing a carbon tax, which, you know, there have been two models over the past few years that have been tossed around. One is a carbon trading scheme. That's where you got the carbon credits thing, and the more you clean up your act, the more credits you have, which you can sell, and blah, 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 blah. And there's the kind of straight-up carbon tax, like, okay, for every ton of carbon you produce, you're going to pay a certain amount of tax into it. And the more you clean up your act, the less of this tax you'll pay. And that's why the tax would increase over time, so that those that aren't cleaning their act get more incentive to clean up their act. But we now get into this, you know, aside from the deniers going nuts, we get into the whole, what's a protected industry? Because everybody starts going nuts, and every modeling that gets press is either from a mining company, from an agriculture chemicals company, or, you know, some other fairly old school, threatened anyway industry. And yet none of the modeling for the government's plan has actually been released yet, because they're still discussing the price. You can't come up with the final numbers until you've worked out certain details. And one is the price per ton. So they're using a manufactured confusion to cloud the debate. And this is what happened when Kevin Rudd first tried to do a trading scheme, which I didn't think was the better of the two mechanisms, but hey, he was having a go. Again, there, weren't talking about the specifics, any dollars. They were actually talking about just setting up the mechanism, the trading scheme, the system. But yet, the vested interests, the mining companies and the resource companies and the steel companies and whatnot, all attacked it on some sort of job loss numbers and whatnot, running data and assumptions that they had no basis for. And we're running into that again. even though our prime minister is actually going against a campaign promise. She said she'd never do a carbon tax, but this is one of those promises I'm glad that she broke. Because the trading scheme thing, as far as I've been able to understand it, is much more susceptible to corruption. And I don't really feel like giving another international big bank another market to manipulate. So we end up having a false argument. We're having one right now, right? And I got to give the government credit for at least the going here. And I think they will actually get this thing across the line because the people have made it pretty clear that something needs to be done. And it's time to start charging the polluters. Now they all go, oh, you know, they're just going to raise prices, this price, that price, the other thing. Okay, okay, phase five is I'm going to take you on this a little bit. He says to me, he goes, I think the problem is that just like the GST, the goods and services tax, it was meant to stop the black economy, and it just made it worse. The carbon tax in Australia is just going to really hurt average people and not stop pollution. Well, I'm going to disagree with you. Because no matter how much I don't want to admit it, higher taxes on cigarettes have made me smoke less. And the only way that we're going to change people's behavior, because there is a bit of changing behavior that needs to take place here. At the moment, we are subsidizing the very forms of energy that are making the mess. And we're expecting new technologies to run on a par with them without the same subsidies. That's pretty well kind of a screwed up, inverse way to look at the situation. We should be disadvantaging the what is truly more expensive. Because if you look at these things and all in their isolation all the time, it's really easy to say, oh, this is going to be only negatively impacted. Yeah, there's going to be some cost, but see, like they keep screaming, they've already talked about at $30 a ton, one of the biggest industries with their panties in a twist crying bloody murder is the steel industry, right? And I understand higher, you know, they got to use that, you know, that high coking coal and all that kind of thing. But even with something as reasonable, and I consider it reasonable, $30 a ton, that would raise the price of steel less than 0.1%. We've got to look at what $30 on a ton actually calculates out to. Yeah, and I know you've turned off everything that you can. You can't put solar panels up and all that. The 30% from July thing, you can really blame that more on what's been done with privatizing and other things. The carbon tax is not going to turn out to be as bad as they're portraying. And in fact, the energy producers kind of want it. The producers, not the miners who they have to buy the fuel from, but the producers, the energy producers, the electrical generators, are like, let's get this thing sorted so we can now adjust the business model. And they will be able to adjust the business model, and they'll be able to say, okay, to combat the tax, how fast do we need to invest you know, It's really, when you're talking about $30 on a ton of carbon output, that's not a lot. But I'm afraid that here, they're going to use the money, and they're talking about that, you know, for people under a certain income, there's going to be assistance to help with the increases in energy costs and all that. But it will make people that waste a little less, because it's going to be more expensive to be wasteful. We got to make it more expensive to do the wrong thing than to do the right thing, because right now it's the opposite way. And if you're doing the damage and you're profiting off of it, I don't have any problem in charging this tax. Look, man, my industry, which relies on petrol to go to get around and tour, the reason why I have, like, no crew anymore is because of the increase in the cost of fuel. The only place that it's come out in touring, in entertainment touring, it all comes down to the petrol cost. It all comes down to your gasoline bill or your diesel bill. After you've gotten through that and all your other costs, then you can decide how much crew you can hire. So I see that impacting, but because we've already been dealing with it, we've been working in the last 10 years, because they actually said that incandescent light bulbs were inefficient, we're going to phase them out. The lighting industry went nuts and said, okay, we got to really get in on this LED thing. And I'm seeing moving light systems based on LEDs that are compact, lightweight, use a fraction of the power. We used to have to go out there with these huge dimmer racks that ran on 240 volts. They'd have to run off of 2- and 3-phase power using huge amounts of current. And now I see guys running stuff that puts out the same amount of candle power and running it off of like one 10-amp circuit. Or maybe two. So, as we kind of got taxed in a way without it being a tax, because of the imposition of the cost on the industry has worked to make things lighter and smaller and more efficient. And I can take PA systems out now that are half the size that they were 10 years ago for the same, like, big festival. You physically look at how much in the way of gear, and that's less trucking. And so we need to actually push this kind of thing. Remove the loopholes from those that do it dirty. And yeah, you know, at every change, there's going to be people that are going to be affected negatively. I don't know what to do about it. But see, I've already been dealing with the idea of petrol costs becoming like way out of whack. And I don't think, I think the markets manipulate it more than a carbon tax is ever going to. When you're talking about $30 a ton of carbon, it does take quite a bit of fossil fuel to burn to produce a ton of carbon. I think we end up being too short-sighted on this stuff and get distracted by nonsensical arguments and also arguing over, like, especially now that this is one of the things that the Labor Party here, twice now they're screwing this up, both with the carbon trading scheme and with this carbon tax. They're doing the right thing by trying to bring the subject out into debate to come up with a bit of consensus on something that they want to move on. So they come in without having every piece of math done. But it's because they want to discuss some of the basic fundamental variables in the system. Like, what do we charge? And if we charge this price, what will the impacts be? And if we charge this price, what will the impacts be? And with those impacts, what kind of revenue will we have to work with to offset for those who are really getting belted by it and investing in actually getting cleaner stuff that doesn't have to pay the tax to generate the energy. I just think, again, it's always just so short-sighted, and I hate to, you know, I know, and I feel that people who say, oh, energy costs going up by 30%, blah, 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 blah. That's not the energy tax. Or that's not the carbon tax. There's a lot of other manipulation that goes on. It's just my... But, you know, but going back to, you know... This is such a big this is such a big issue, right? And this is one of the things that we run into, I think, in the modern world. This is a huge issue. And you get, and you end up with honestly concerned and dedicated people trying to come up with solutions. But on something this big, you can't have just like one person or just a couple of people make all the decisions for something that's going to be that's going to make some fundamental changes that are long overdue. But in the opposition ends up using it not as a moment, and this, I think, goes back to this argumentative theory idea. They're not out to debate the ideas. They're just out to point score and shut you down before you even have a chance to get what's not even your ideas. Just, we're faced with a situation. This and this and this appears to be leading us to this. What can we do about it? And then you have people going, it's going to cause this many jobs, but it's like we haven't even gotten to that point yet. Does Australia have an EPA? We have an environment minister, an environment ministry, and we also have a climate change minister and a climate change ministry. And have had both for quite a while, even going back to the Howard era. And, you know, Johnny Howard only later in his career became completely polarized in this issue. He did make some interesting moves and do some good things early on. And again, this is where, you know, just here in Australia, it's the same thing in the States. When did the environment become a completely partisan issue? CLB says, okay, John, where have you been? Obviously not in the U.S. politics. That's the definition of an argumentative theory from an applied point of view, then I really get it. Well, I'm getting it too, but from the article, they're saying how this is kind of like a new way to look at what we used to look at as, rational reason. And so has the fundamental idea of rational reason been wrong? And those of us that try and have a reasoned discussion in hopes to bring someone to our point of view or to what we see as being the truth, we're doing it for reasons other than what we actually think we're doing them for. Anyway. But I love discussions about the theory of discussion. Because, I mean, like, kind of like, woo-wee, you can go right down that rabbit hole there. We having fun, rabbits? and so, again, I keep, you know, in so many ways, we're not actually having a debate, are we? We're just kind of like having a poop slinging contest. Is that all that we're always doing? And the very expectation of wanting to see reason is possibly flawed. That no matter, you know, being disappointed by the lack of reason, I think that's normal, but accepting that you should have no expectation of reason, because it's not, has nothing to do with reason, that really does my head in. On a fundamental level. So it's basically been telling me that in the world of discourse, my expectations have always been far too high. Scary stuff. Anyway, what's the clock doing? We got about 10 minutes left in the program. I reckon that I'm not going to be hearing from anybody, but if you got something you want to get off your chest before we run out of time, 304-574-7811, we got about 10 minutes left. And once again, I'll remind you, I hate doing this. I don't think anyone hates doing it more than Bob does. But if you haven't and you can, please visit headonradionetwork.com and click on the contribute link and throw something in the kitty. I am going to make real moves to try and get Bob Kincaid on the phone tomorrow, now that I know that he's actually in Minnesota and settling in. Okay, CLB says to me, don't buy that, John, because if you think about it, logic, which is the domain of reason or vice versa, has a motivational prerequisite that is the scientific pursuit of truth, for the belief that truth is more important than for evolution than belief. Beliefs require argumentative theory, if you will, because we fight to the end to convince people that what we believe is important. I can't argue with any of that. Like I said, CLB, this piece talked about a lot of the different arguments, and it's interesting. It's interesting, you know, just to look at it from another direction. And it's not the same as the truth. And one of the things that they say is that it seems that certainty can be incredibly convincing, no matter how far from the truth that certainty might live. So there's where, so if someone's certain about something, says something with certainty, that can be really convincing to me, even if I know of facts to the contrary. If you want the article, go to the show post today at headonradionetwork.com. You'll see the prayer meeting post, hilarious image that Susan put up. And there's a link to it there. It's a New York Times piece. It's one of these, you know, someone wrote about a subject that doesn't really get written about very often. And that someone's brought in some new ideas into things. And it's always really good to flip an understood or well understood or well accepted concept on its head. You know, I mean, that's kind of like a part of the scientific process. You know, science is always trying to disprove itself, because as long as it can't disprove itself, it can be continued to be believed to be a true, as best to our knowledge, an honest conclusion. So, you know, I really like the and what I found interesting, CLB, and have a read of it and tell me what you think tomorrow, where they talk about how the concept that we have for debate and democracy is great, but that the way the American system is with the high volume, high polarized environment actually ends up making the idea of rational reason fall apart. And that it might be just a bit of the environment in which we participate tends to make it go off course, which is interesting. It's just a different way of thinking about it. And CLB chimes in. She says, yes, people's brains can be manipulated by creating cognitive dissonance. and that alone can upend your commitment to facts if the other's persuasive power is enough. Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, cognitive dissonance is one of those things that, like, I think so much of the world suffers from on so many levels and issues that it's a great way to just not deal with things that are too hard. You know what I mean? Just a little too hard. But anyway, yeah, I recommend everybody have a reading of the piece and just see if you come away with something different, you know. And tomorrow, you know, let's talk about it. Because if there's anything that we've done a lot of this week, whether it's been with Sandra or Susan or David, is that there's something in the way things are communicated, debated, whatever, that just isn't working. You know, David talked about staying on message and training and, you know, talked about education and maybe we have to spend a little time looking at what it actually is to debate, what it is to reason, what it is to argue. To find a better way forward so that maybe we are more convincing or we are more effective or something. Something. The weird world we play in or we live in. And one day I'd love to do this program with an engineer. as I look for a closing song, which should have been here. Oh, come on. It's going to be all like this. It's going to be all grand. And then, no, you're not there. Ah, there you are. Ah, new software. What are you going to do? Anyway, folks, we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for being here today. Like I said, throw into the kitty if you can. If you can't, totally understandable. I'm going to try and get Bob on the phone tomorrow night. Stick around. Rick Smith is coming up next. Some of you, I reckon, will be going off to Malloy's room. But if you haven't listened to Rick, you really, 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 really gotta. I really dig what he does. It's a little bit localized, but man, all those labor issues, it's big stuff. And he did some really good stuff in Wisconsin during the old sit-in. So big thanks to Susan, Texas Betsy, Lottie, Gene, everybody in the chat room, all the bloggers, everybody who helps out, Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for everything he does for us. And thanks to Bob for letting me do this. It's always a good time. And as Bob always closes, and always, Gina, it's all for you.